I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and normally Marek Larwood would be joining me, but Marek is busy rehearsing a play of some kind. He's found gainful employment, so we're all very proud. So, to sub in for Marek, who better than original Film Fandango host Danielle Ward?
Hello, David!
It is Danielle Ward.
A Marek Larwood impression.
Oh, is that your Marek? Is that you?
For the whole show.
Oh, no, this is going to be as intolerable.
I'm not going to say it.
You can fill in the blanks yourself.
Yeah, fill in the blanks. What do you think Marek hates?
Mostly his life.
I hate people.
Yeah, there we go. How are you doing, Danielle?
I'm fine. It's the hottest day of the year.
It is the hottest day of the year.
So far, I mean, like, it might be even hotter on Friday.
I think weathermen are confident, aren't they? They're confident they've called it correctly.
Yeah, weathermen.
Don't get me started on weathermen.
Blimey.
Oh. Have you been watching many films since you were last on the show?
Oh, I've seen at least two films since I was last on the show.
Yeah.
I watched half a documentary yesterday called Girl Model.
What was this about?
It's about some young Russian girls that are picked up by a model agency and sent to Japan. Now, I stopped halfway through because I was a bit tired and I thought, I'm going to fall asleep, and it had subtitles. So you can't have a nap during a film with
very
subtitles.
Very difficult.
And there was a lady on the trans... I assume she was on the Trans-Manchurian, but who knows...
Express the train.
Rather
than, I thought you were going to say on the trans spectrum. What?
She was on a train. But as we all know, the Trans-Siberian Express goes to Vladivostok.
We do know
the
that.
The Trans-Manchurian Express goes to
Manchester.
Yeah.
That's right.
And as we all know, China's in Japan.
That's right, yeah.
Which is where she was going.
Sure. What are you talking about?
Anyway, I watched half of it and I turned it off. And also I started, but it recommended it to me because I watched half of the documentary, Hot Girls Wanted.
No, that's not a documentary. I think that's some niche pornography.
I keep watching.
No, it's not even niche. That's some popular pornography.
I keep watching half a documentary.
Just before the turn, just before things suddenly get interesting.
Watching half a documentary about young girls being exploited.
Oh, is it that one about exploitation as well?
Yeah, that was about the porn industry. That Rashida Jones is the
what? Oh, the narrator. Okay.
No, she's the producer,
not the subject.
They don't have narrators anymore in documentaries, Dave. What
Some
do
of them
you think
don't.
It is? 1997.
Well, we are living in a post-Senna world, aren't
yeah.
we? I mean, that Senna managed to do it purely with archive footage, and everyone's going, "Oh, that is clever."
And that's what he's done with the Amy Winehouse thing as well.
I cannot wait to see that. To be honest, I mean, normally I'd be like, "Yeah, sort of interested." I mean, I was sat here when I heard the news she had died just up the road, which is a bit of a weird feeling.
I live here as well.
Absolutely. But you weren't here, though, I don't think.
I was
think.
Here.
Were you here?
It was me. I told you that she died.
I forget when you're here.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm looking forward to that, because he does a very good documentary, that fella.
I'll watch all of it, I imagine.
Wow. I mean, what... You should tell him, he'd be thrilled.
So they're the films that I've watched. Two half a documentaries about young girls.
Okay. And can you recommend either of those halves?
Well, I've only watched half of them, so they can't have been that good.
I don't know. I felt exactly the same way about Terry Gilliam's Zero Theorem. But I was so tired watching it. I I'm totally willing to give it another shot because I just think it wasn't going in, you know. It was just sort of colours and noise.
I'll probably revisit them. I mean, I've seen some other films as well. I know Marek hated it. I loved Whiplash. And the reason, anybody who hates Whiplash, the reason that you hate Whiplash is exactly the reason I love it.
Why is that?
That's how I feel about Kanye West as well.
Why is that? Because you love dicks.
Yeah, I love dicks. I like my dicks how I like my dick.
Dicks. It's a good slogan to live by. Well, on that, we have, speaking of loving dicks, we've seen a film this week.
Oh, that's a poor
I leapt upon a segue. It was ill-advised. In honour, I may have slightly underdone the honour part of this now, but in honour of the victory for the lesbian, gay and bisexual community in America that it is now legal to marry in all 50 states, we have watched a film that we wanted to watch for a while, but it's called Love is Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
Sylvia! Yes, Nikki. Somebody, if you're a girl, you'll get that. I imagine none of you listen.
I didn't get it.
Do you get many female listeners?
The stats don't tell us.
What?
No, they only tell us this country of origin.
Mm.
I know, terrible, isn't it? We've no idea who's listening, other than the people who email in.
Okay.
Which through those statistics, we can tell that the people listening are called Chris Webb. yes, this is a film from 2014. And it stars John Lithgow and Alfred Molina and Marissa Tomei as well. Danielle, do you want to tell them a brief sort of synopsis without spoilers so people know what we're talking about?
The synopsis is, and it's a very clean setup, two lovely gay guys get married. They've been together 39 years. They finally get married. And everybody's very excited. And then one of them loses their job. And so they have to move out of their New York apartment. And the film is them starting their married life together, living in two different places.
Yeah, in sort of couch surfing, not close family, just sort of uncles.
One is with their friends, who are a pair of high-living gay cops.
High-living who play D&D, I noticed.
They play D&D, and yet they're high-living, and they're very nice.
Yeah, and the others with...
They don't seem to shoot any black guys in it, so... and not saying that all American cops do that, just some of them. So that's Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
And John Lithgow moves in with his family, which is his nephew and his nephew's wife and their son. So it's these two men having to live apart, but also having to live with people that are sort of putting up with them.
Yeah. And it's just that played out, really. We don't want to spoil it. But I found it quite painfully true to watch, the way that there's so much goodwill and that sort of slowly erodes once you actually have to live with something, you know.
Yeah. I said to you, because we're having a conversation, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
I said to you, to the people listening, I said to David, said to you last night watching it, after about half an hour, I said, oh, it's like Bad Santa, I can't cope, it's got too many emotions in it.
Yeah, because the two films that are emotionally true that you've seen are Love is Strange and Bad Santa.
Bad Santa, I can't bear it, it makes me cry so much.
It's the whittling a pickle, isn't it?
It's the stoicism of the little boy.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it before on this podcast, but the thing that brings a tear to my eye is always people being kind even though the world is shitting on them. And that it's nothing is sadder, but I mean, this,
it's not quite like that,
but this
is just very
it's too real to be like that. It's not melodrama, really. It's very, very good. I mean, I've as long as I can remember, I've loved John Lithgow as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I
Harry and the Hendersons.
It wasn't actually Harry and the Hendersons that did it for me. That's why he's in a lot of people's hearts, of course, as the dad in that Bigfoot movie. It was as BZ, the villain in the Santa Claus the Movie with Dudley Moore. He's a really good evil villain.
I think that's one of my favourite Santa films.
What are the others?
Not Bad Santa.
That's not one of your favourites.
Bad Santa.
Yeah.
I can't watch it.
No, but that's good.
It's crippling.
Films are supposed to make you feel things, even if it's just like, awesome. You know,
my favourite Santa film.
Yeah.
My mum's is Tim Allen's The Santa Claus.
Oh, right, yes, because, yes.
Because she watches ITV and I imagine it's on there. Anyway, we're getting all things sidetracked.
Okay, so...
Love is Strange.
Yes, and you hadn't seen... Have you seen Alfred Molina before in something? You hadn't realised he was in Raiders,
no,
that was it.
I haven't seen him. I've seen him in that that short with...
Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan,
Coffee
yeah.
and Cigarettes.
Yeah.
That's Jim Jarmusch. A wonderful piece, black and white, people meeting over coffee and cigarettes, lots of little short stories, some better than others. But
that's the only one I've seen.
The Steve Coogan Alfred Molina one's excellent.
They're
very good together, aren't they?
They are very good together.
Totally believable. It's like it's like the real life version of Nathan Lane and Robin Williams in The Birdcage, which is sort of a heightened version of a gay couple.
So, look, we can't tell you too much about Love is Strange because it just plays out this lovely, sad, sweet, but incredibly stoic situation where these two very lovely men are staying with their very lovely families / friends, but it's all just grating on everybody a little bit.
And then, it's just actually seeing it. Experienced older people, compassionate, kind, worldly people dealing with tragedy as well is almost more heartbreaking because they're not melodramatic about it.
Yeah.
You know, in so often it's just like, well, if you could weep uncontrollably at this moment so the audience know what's happening.
Yeah. But also, like, there's a bit where Marissa Tomei gets a bit cross, make it sound really exciting. There's this great car chase. There's a bit where she gets a bit cross with John Lithgow, who is an old man. And you sort of think, well, if you had John Lithgow around your house, you'd be really excited to talk to him. But it does, like, I think it does make you realise that sometimes the way you talk to older people is either patronising or short tempered or. And it just made me feel a bit sad. I once went to a combat class, which is a mixed martial arts aerobics class.
Sure.
And the man next to this old man there, and he like really old, right? It's a really...
One of those UFC old men.
One of the UFC old men. Yeah. It's a really high-intensity class, but he's a very old man. He must be, like, in his 70s.
Was it Sly Stallone?
No. No, and, like, he's quite frail. But obviously he's trying to keep fit. He's trying to keep his heart in a good place. And... At the end of the class, you do kind of press-ups and stuff on the mat. And he threw his mat down and it hit me in the face. And I got really annoyed. And he went, oh, I'm so sorry. And I was like, oh, I'm annoyed now. And at the end, he came up to me and went, I'm really sorry. And I thought, I know you are. And so I said, oh, I know, like, don't worry about it. It's fine. It just shocked me. It just surprised me. But obviously, it's no problem at all. I'm really sorry if I snapped. And then I nearly cried because I thought he was being so sweet. He didn't drop a mat in my face, but... It's that. That's it. Made me remember that.
It's that over and over again.
It made me remember that over and over again.
Oh, it's a very gentle, sweet film. Like it's beautifully done. It's a director called Ira Sachs, who I've not seen his stuff before. He's written it as well.
And it's one of the few genuine, like it's a genuine adaptation. It genuinely shows you what New York is like, which isn't this sort of Woody Allen Sex in the City. It's another character. It's just like, oh, it's really hard because it's really expensive living in New York.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the plot is about sort of rent control and
how they're like if
housing.
They,
I mean, that's very contemporary, I guess, about housing prices.
And how like the co-op have taken 25% of their profit because they flipped the house in under 5 years and stuff like that, which.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Carrie Bradshaw going, oh, I love my amazing apartment and I'm going to go and live in Mr. Big's swanky penthouse and I keep my apartment for a place to keep my shoes.
Sure.
That's what happens in the second film. She keeps her amazing apartment for her fucking shoes.
Yeah, I didn't
Russell see... Brand, where were you when that was happening?
What, to have a go at Sex and the City 2?
Yeah.
I think everyone had a go at Sex in the City 2. We probably couldn't hear Russell Brand over the clamour of people going, Sex in the City 2 is terrible.
Well, you know, the racism was quite bad, but also the thing about her keeping a flat just for her shoes.
I mean, it's gotten a bit... It's gotten a bit cliche of itself, hasn't it? A bit self-parody by that point.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The second film was awful. It's awful. Yeah. Can't wait for the third one, girls.
Is it happening?
I think so. They're not doing much else, are they?
Well, not really. Not really.
I like it. If you follow Kim Cattrall on Twitter, she sometimes talks to Sarah Millican, which is fun.
Oh, that's nice.
But also,
she's British, isn't she?
She's from Liverpool. She tweets about Liverpool FC. She's the only person on my timeline who tweets about Liverpool who's actually from fucking Liverpool.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
She doesn't live there, though. Like all the best people from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Love is Strange. How many Danielles would you give it?
I'd give it 5. I thought it was incredible.
No, out of 10.
Out of 10. I give it 9 Danielles.
9
then.
Danielles. Yeah.
Because 5 felt a bit much out of 5, but I was going to go there. Sure, 9 Danielles.
9. Okay, I think I'd give it 8 Davids. I thought it was very good.
I thought it was really lovely.
Really, really good. Love is Strange. You can catch it on streaming services now and presumably on telly at some point as well. Right. Letters. Letters continue into the letters section. Thank you for everyone who's emailed in. If you would like to do so and have your email read out for future episodes, then please email us dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Now, firstly, we have rather a long one, so we're going to split it up. So how is your Newcastle accent?
It's not very good.
It's not very good. Well, you can do this one then. this is in a Newcastle accent.
No.
So this is from Simon Bonner.
Is this the missed films bit?
Yes.
How we all do it like Cheryl Cool. I was also tripped up by 12 angry men on the IMDb top 250, leaving me with a not too respectable number of 6.
We should explain what he's talking about.
Please
here.
Please do.
Basically, we played a game where counting down from number 1, you go to the IMDb top 250 movies of all time, and the first film you haven't seen is your score.
No.
So the higher the number you can get, the better you can do.
Mm.
We'll do it with you at the end of the letter.
I thought I might fare better on the Sights and Sound critic list, but no. Both of you said you haven't seen M or Paths of Glory, so I am going to make the case for giving them a try. I saw M for the first time last year when it was re-released in UK cinemas. It's about the hunt for a child killer and the hysteria that envelops our German city where everybody is a suspect. Often the acting in films from this era, 1931, is a little bit stagey, but Peter Lorre's performance as the killer is possibly the best I have ever seen. You soon realise this is a film that could never be made now. The audience is asked to sympathise with the killer in a way that would be unacceptable today. It is a great, unpredictable thriller. Paths of Glory is Kubrick's first really amazing film. A group of French soldiers is sentenced to death for abandoning their posts in a World War I battle. The brilliantly weird Tim Carey's emotional collapse as the execution approaches is heartbreaking, and I challenge you not to blub when Christian Kubrick makes the final real cameo as a captured German singer. It could well be the best final scene in cinema history. Don't watch it out of context. That sounds really good.
Paths of Glory and M. Have you seen either of those?
No,
then?
Paths of Glory sounds good. I'll be honest, I was concentrating so hard on the accent during M, I wasn't listening.
Well, I was concentrating so hard on trying to understand what you were saying that I was phasing in and out. But I'm going to go to the IMDb top 250 and see what Danielle's score is. I think yours is going to be higher than ours.
I don't think it is. There'll be like some obvious Mel Gibson film at number 3 that I've never seen.
Okay, so from number 1, we go from The Shawshank Redemption
going,
all the way
going,
through The Dark Knight, Pulp Fiction, 12 Angry Men.
Oh, 8.
8. The Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Yeah.
8.
Though I've also not seen Lord of the Rings.
Well, my score was 7 because I've not seen 12 Angry Men.
Oh, I've seen 12 Angry Men.
So you've beaten me. You've beaten me, but you'll have to see Lord of the Rings to carry on up that list.
Okay. And another Lord of the fucking Rings. No thanks,
they're
mate.
Very highly placed, which is a shame, isn't it?
I haven't seen them because they sound really, 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 really boring.
Well, I might put our scores on Facebook and then people can add theirs underneath. We've got another letter. We'll read the rest of Simon Bonner's letter out a bit later because it was rather long and that accent is intolerable. So
it is. Also, I read that people don't like ladies with high voices.
Where did you read that?
I don't know. There's a shrill thing apparently because my own voice is quite high.
No, your own voice is quite...
It's quite high.
Is it?
Yeah. And when I do... when I do my character up at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, I try and drop it. I do a Nottingham accent because it naturally makes my voice lower.
Do your accent now?
No.
Oh, go on.
No, I have
Give
to...
Us a bit. You've promised us some Nottingham
I
now.
I have to run it in, no.
You have to run it in?
No.
Do some warm-ups?
Yeah, I have to do some vocal warm-ups okay, to get enough. It there.
Like, what's your show? Tell our listeners about your show.
Oh, hi, listener. Well. My show...
His name's Chris.
Hi, Chris. My show is called Danny Frankenstein, it's called Danielle Ward, Danny Frankenstein. And it is on at the Voodoo Rooms for free at 12:30 every day apart from on Tuesdays because I get a bit tired and sad doing the same thing every day. Come and see it during the Edinburgh Fringe. It's on every day of the whole Fringe apart from those days not at the end or the beginning either because I haven't done that.
Sure, that sounds good.
It's really good. If you like song, if you hate musical comedy... Still come, because I hate musical comedy. It's really good. It's all done on GarageBand. If you hated Kanye West at Glastonbury because he was a person alone on stage with just a backing track for Company and a live vocoder. Heavy, what's it called? Auto-tune. If you don't like someone by themselves with a backing track and heavy auto-tune, don't come and see my show. I haven't even got a cherry picker.
Oh no, you're not going to go out over the audience at any point.
I know.
Well, they do break. That happened to David Bowie famously, didn't it? He went out over his audience in a cherry picker and it broke down. He had to do 3 songs in the same place.
Bloody hell.
I know.
He doesn't like flying. You think he
must
like...
have been terrified.
You think he wouldn't like cherry pickers?
Maybe that's why he doesn't like
Maybe
flying.
Maybe it is.
Well, this next email is from Matt Ray and he's asked for it to be read out in the style of Tom Hardy's Ivan Locke from the film Locke.
I could have done that.
Well, I thought it'd be funny to hear your Geordie. But okay. Ivan Locke, dear David, Marek and Buddy.
Buddy's asleep, it's really hot.
And Marek's not here. I'm really enjoying your recommendations on documentary recently and suggest the film Atari Game Over.
Ugh, sounds great.
The story of the rise and fall of the Atari Games Company with the culmination in their most unpopular game in history, E.T. Worth a watch and gets 8 mats. It has recently struck me that a lot of films starring Tom Hanks could be replaced by Bill Murray and vice versa. Do you think there are any other actors that could be interchanged in ever individual... I was trying to understand what on earth it was saying. Do you think there are any other actors that could be interchanged in either individual films or full careers? Love the podcast and keep watching the films. Matt Ray. So, Bill Murray and Tom Hanks are interchangeable. Interesting. I suppose they're both sort of cuddly leading men of sorts. Tom Hanks is one who I always go, Tom Hanks, and then I watch him in something and he's brilliant. Whereas Bill Murray, go, yeah, Bill Murray, and he's still brilliant.
Yeah.
But how many Bill Murray films have you seen? Obviously, everyone's seen all of Tom Hanks's films.
I haven't seen Forrest Gump.
Have you not?
No.
Well, that would have tripped you up for very soon on the top 250. Yeah.
Just strikes me as...
Oh, it's good. It's dated a bit because its CGI is so rubbish. But,
is it?
Well, by today's standards, you know, putting fake lips on John Lennon so he says different things.
Sounds a bit Derek to me, I'm afraid.
It's got some very good scenes in it, actually. Mm. Sort of iconic ones.
Yeah, but people who like stuff are idiots.
But I think Tom Hanks probably commits to a role a bit more than Bill Murray. Bill Murray playing a mentally handicapped man would be, I think, a bit different. Well, that's pretty much what he does in Caddyshack.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been way more of a slapstick comedy. Tom Hanks would have been fun in... not in Ghostbusters, because that would...
It wouldn't have been. That wouldn't have worked. I'm not sure about this theory, Matt Ray. I'm not sure about it at all.
Bill Murray in Philadelphia? I don't think so.
I'm not sure about that.
I don't think so. Bill Murray in Castaway, maybe.
That would have been interesting.
Would have been funnier.
Yeah, but you would have felt sort of sadder when he was going sort of a bit out of his mind.
Bill Murray in Captain Phillips, not as good.
Not as good.
He couldn't have done that bit at the end.
That's the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what that is. Though I've not seen that because I cannot stand Wes Anderson films.
Okay. I quite like that. I've heard...
That's why I like Whiplash.
Okay. I've heard the Grand Budapest Hotel's good, and Marek watched it, so I haven't seen it. But
did Marek like it?
He did, yeah.
Did I tell you what Dan Tetzel referred to... when me and Martin used to do a show on Absolute Radio, we'd ask people... Oh, no, I think it was when we did it on FUBAR. We asked people for film reviews of films that they've not seen.
Okay.
And Dan Tetzel tweeted, "The Grand Budapest Hotel, Fawlty Towers for cunts."
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's shot remarkably similar to The Shining as well. Yeah. Similarly, rather, to The Shining. Well, I haven't seen it. I couldn't possibly say. Dan Tetzel, of course, comedian, star of Hollyoaks, and he brought in Baron Munchausen when
One
he was
the
on the show.
One of the best choices I've
One
seen.
Of the most interesting, certainly. Really good. Anyway... we've got a little surprise for you now. Marek Larwood, though not here, has recorded for
David,
us...
David, I am. I've just been hiding round the corner.
Oh, it's Marek. He's just come from round the corner. No, Marek's recorded... he's seen a film this week, and he's recorded his own review himself. We've not heard it, but here it is now.
Hello, David. Hello, Danielle. And hello, buddy. And also, hello, listeners. It's Marek here from a very hot and humid North London flat. It's something like 35 degrees still, and it's late in the evening. I'm massively dehydrated. Apologies for not being able to be there, but I have been to cinema. I went to see Mr. Holmes. What's that about? Sherlock Holmes? Yes, you'd be right. Is it a traditional Sherlock Holmes film? No. It's Sherlock Holmes, who's got pretty much Alzheimer's. So from the off, you know, this is going to be a thoroughly depressing film. Sherlock Holmes is played by Ian McKellen, who is brilliant. I mean, this is a case of one of those films where it's solely reliant on Ian McKellen being so good. Without him, it is moderately turgid, but without him it would have been awful. And for some odd reason, they've got Laura Linney playing this, I don't even know where she's supposed to be from. It's set near Eastbourne, so on the south coast, but she's got some weird sort of Cornwall accent. And you know when someone's not native of the area, an American trying to do the nuances of a Cornwall accent are probably just slightly better than when I do my African impression of people. So I don't know why he's chosen Laura Linney. Probably because it's directed by a bloke called Bill Condon, who has previously directed films like Twilight, Breaking Dawn, Part 1 and 2. But he's better known for Kinsey, Gods and Monsters, The Fifth Estate. Slightly boring films. And this is pretty much what this is, a too slow, slightly boring film. Ian McKellen is magnetic to watch. He just goes through about 15 different million emotions just looking out of a window. But at the end of the day, I want to see more than Ian McKellen look out of a window. And the amazing saving grace for this film is that when Mr. Holmes goes to the cinema to see a film which is made about Sherlock Holmes, and he complains that they're all over dramatised. Is that right? Over, you know what I mean. They're over dramatised films. And the actor who's playing him in the black and white Sherlock Holmes films is none other than Nicholas Rowe. Who is he? Yes, well, I'll tell you. He is the actor who brilliantly portrayed young Sherlock Holmes, which is a much better film. The very first film I brought on as a guest on Film Fandango years and years ago. He plays Sherlock Holmes as the actor, as an older Sherlock Holmes in these black and white films. Mr. Holmes is set just 1930s, after the war, 1950s, I think, something like that. I can't remember, maybe it's 1930s. Anyway, the point is, it's a really nice nod to young Sherlock Holmes. I'm really glad that Nicholas Rowe is getting work still from the Sherlock Holmes scene, because he is born to play Sherlock Holmes and should be doing more of it. All right. So the story is basically Mr. Sherlock Holmes, he's not the same as in the books. He portrays if he was a real life figure, and Watson has exaggerated his story. So he's added the deerstalker hat and the pipe. He's sort of made over, you know, used poetic license, when in reality the stories were a lot more human and less far fetched. You know, as you do when you're retelling the story in a pub, I suppose. And he's got a case he wants to solve, and he's just gradually losing his memory as well. And the story's not amazing. I thought it would be an amazing story. If anything, this is a film about getting old. So if you want to watch another depressing film about getting old, this is for you. I think this is almost like the Grey Pound, or is it called? This is a film for old people. And the problem is, all these films for old people are just all about dying and getting Alzheimer's. So if you're going to cinema as an old person thinking, you know what, I've got a few years left, I'll spend these days going to cinema, all the blooming films you get to watch are about people with chronic memory loss. And then I started getting paranoid that I had Alzheimer's afterwards, which is always happens after every one of these films I've watched. And the problem is, I can't even remember the film was happened before, so that probably says I have got it. What else have I got to say about it? There's a boy in it called Roger, played by Milo Parker. Punchability, child actor punchability, I give him a 6, which means I would punch him in the face if I saw him in real life. What was strange was, I went to see this in the Muswell Hill Odeon, and the other news is that finally the Muswell Hill Odeon has been bought by the Everyman and is no longer the Muswell Hill Odeon. And good. Because that's an amazing cinema, and they've shut on it continuously for a period of about 70 years. In that cinema, there were 5 people. Me, one woman who was tutting, a strange man with a lot of rustling things, I don't know what they were, and a couple who were so old, they must have been about 80, but they were completely oblivious to the fact they were in the cinema. But the old lady was talking out loud all the way through it, saying things like, "Well, I don't understand what's going on. Do you, Peter?" At that sort of level, at every 5-minute intervals. And it's a problem where they're almost too old that you can't say something, because they're going to die shortly anyway. They don't give a shit. Anyway, so that is my review of Mr. Holmes. I give it 5... Marek's, purely because Ian McKellen gets all 5. He adds +5 to a film, and this is not a film without him. So there we go. That is probably pretty tedious, listen to that 5.5 minutes, but wait till it comes out on television. I'll be back very soon. Keep watching the films and all that business. Bye.
Okay, thank you for that, Marek. Now, for the second half of Simon Bonner's email, his epic email, back to Geordie Danielle.
I'm surprised nobody has mentioned Miami Connection. The IMDb summary says it is all... The IMDb summary says it all.
Got you.
A martial arts rock band goes up against a band of motorcycle ninjas who have tightened their grip on Florida's narcotics trade. Like Troll 2 and The Room, it's an American film directed by someone who has no insight into American culture. The film climaxes with an extremely bloody machete fight in a ditch, and then, in the greatest have your cake and eat it moment, flashes up the title. And this is what it says in the title: only through the elimination of violence can we achieve world peace. Tremendous. Oh, a fun fact, a chum of mine was the DP and co-editor of Best Worst Movie. She got the gig after the director saw a fan trailer she posted on YouTube. We should all be so lucky and talented. Cheers, Simon.
Oh, thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
That film sounds amazing. And not enough finales of movies happen in a ditch, I don't think. I think that's a very ambitious place to set your final fight. I want to see more of it. Yeah, if you know any ditch films, then why not email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or you can go to our Facebook wall, facebook.com/filmfandango, and talk to one another. Or if you've spotted anything, then do tweet us, @filmfandango, or @MrDavidReed, @MerrickLarwood, and
@CaptainWard. Are we going to talk about good, bad films that we like?
Yeah, what? Go on then.
Well, that film, The Ninja Motorcycle.
Yeah, have you seen it?
No, I haven't. But it sounds like I love bad films.
Yes.
But I don't love bad films that try to be bad.
No, I'm not a big fan of these.
Sharknado films.
Well, those are incredibly cynical, because we've seen Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Yeah, boring.
And every single actually entertaining bit, as in, oh, that's funny, mm-hmm, is in the trailer, and yeah, there's three shots, and the rest of it is doing the cheapest production they possibly can so they can claim it's a film. It's a totally cynical business model of they've just thought of a title and done some shots for a trailer and filled in the rest, and it is a business model that I think needs to die, because just piss off Sharknado and
people
all of these.
People like them, though.
But they're the film equivalent of spam. Like, they're just appalling. I can't be doing with it. You're right. I mean, when people have genuinely tried and they thought this was going to be brilliant and they failed, there's something sort of joyous about that. But that is a noble failure, whereas the Sharknado is just an attempt to grab our money.
Whereas, see, that film sounds like it...
It sounds a bit nerd bait, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I've heard Troll 2 is great, but like those sort of like troll and demons and leprechaun and all those sorts of terrible horror films, I actually find a bit boring.
Mm.
I'll be honest. I think it's quite hard to make an entertaining bad horror film.
Yes.
Really. Whereas obviously the best bad film ever is Showgirls, which...
Have you seen recently Elizabeth Berkley actually went to a screening of it?
Really?
And said she's come full circle and she's now accepting of it because it does still have a loyal fan base.
And
she's started to embrace it for the first time. It's taken long enough.
Well, it did ruin her career.
It ruined her entire career and it is appalling. But she's come to... She's come to accept it, which is good on her.
I love it. I can't think of any other good... I mean, I don't try to enjoy... But it's like people who go to the Fringe to see bad shows on purpose.
I just feel awkward doing that.
I don't think that's in the spirit of things.
No.
I mean, I'm all... Like, if something's rubbish, fair enough, slag it off, but don't seek it out.
Yeah.
So, that said, The Room is... I think The Room's a real exception because he did try and make a proper film.
Oh, and yeah, but his failing is spectacular. That's what I mean.
Yeah. It's magnificent.
He is doing his absolute best, and that's why it's so sort of tragically funny.
Yeah.
Well, that's us for this week. We do this podcast for free, so... if you have enjoyed listening to the show and would like to continue listening to it, then please do donate towards our running costs. Go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there. And everyone who has already, thank you very much. Hopefully, Marit will be back next week. But thank you, Danielle, for coming on the show.
I thought of something else to plug.
What do you want to plug?
I've got my own podcast.
Yeah?
Called Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, when's that out?
That's probably out... in July.
Sure.
Now, we don't ask for any money from anybody, but we do only put out 4 episodes a year.
If that.
Because it is really quite a ball ache making them for free.
They are good, though. It's a good show.
It is a really good show. So go, like, find that Do the Right Thing, my podcast. I am the king of it. I do everything. I play Michael, I play Margaret, I do the production. I'm really
good. Can see from, you will have heard this episode from Danielle's vocal talents being a Geordie.
Yes.
I mean, your Michael Legg is
Michael Legg's great.
It's an incredible character.
Oh, my name is Michael Legg.
It's a lot like a pirate.
Yeah. So listen to that, and you don't have to give the money to David, because we split it anyway, so you might as well listen to Do the Right Thing and bum David some more money.
Thank you. All right, we'll be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.